Separate y'all. That's the trouble corner right there. It's good to see everybody tonight. Hope everybody's having a good week. Don't know of anybody new as far as our prayer list is concerned, but certainly we want to remember those folks that have been on it, some for a while, some that are back with us, and we're grateful for that. But let's go ahead and open up with a word of prayer, and we'll jump into our Bible class. Continuing along in our evangelism class in relation to understanding the style that Jesus used in relation to evangelism. And last week, you know, we kind of talked about, kind of got off topic just a little bit in relation to talking about our children, the importance of them understanding what it means to develop their faith and to show that faith and to continue to deploy that faith, so to speak, not only when they're leaving the nest and when they're getting out from home and when they're getting out of the church, in the sense that they're going to a new area, that they continue to stand fast in the foundation of their faith. And one of the things we left off with in relation to that was we've also, not only in teaching them the commandments of the Bible, we've got to make it relational on how they're going to use it, because that's extremely important. They've got to understand the truth, but they also have to understand how they need to apply it. And that falls on us, does it not? Let me ask you a question, and this is, I want to show a hands on this. How many in here care about our children here at the church? Should be every hand, right? So the question is, then why don't we do more to ensure their faith stays strong when they leave the church? Because we have a responsibility. It's not only on the parents, and that's a majority of it, but it's also on the congregation as a whole. Let me give you case in point. I remember when I was growing up, there was when I was attending church in Meridian, Mississippi, my dad was stationed there at the time at the Naval Air Station. And there was one particular, I guess Terry was probably in his mid-20s or so, but I looked up to Terry greatly. You know, here I was, this 13-year-old, I was a brand new Christian and new in Christ, and but one of the things I noticed about Terry was the way that he carried himself. Wasn't married, didn't have any children, and even when I would see Terry out in town, and I would see him around and doing different activities, and when we'd be at different events, Terry always carried himself the same way. He was always a Christian gentleman, always acted the same towards everybody. There was nothing fake or about his facade or who he was as a Christian. That is, he was showing Jesus every aspect and everything that he did in his life. Now, I say that to say this and why that's important, because our children are watching us. They watch everything every one of us does in the congregation, believe it or not. They're paying attention to our actions. So we have as much a responsibility in relation to who we are here as we do out there, because when our children see us, we're reflecting the faith we want them to have. And if they see us acting one way in the church and a different way out in town in the community, what does that say to them? Well, when I get off and go to college, that's the way I can be. And that's not the way we want them to be. So we have an important responsibility to make sure that as they stand in our shadows and as they're looking to us for that growth and certainly that example of what it means to be a Christian, we have to make sure that we exemplify that for them, because we want them to get out in college, and we don't want them to be that statistic that has left the church, do we? Of course we don't. So tonight I want to kind of touch a little bit on the idea of humility and how that's important in relation to evangelism. Humility is an important quality for a Christian. So let me throw this question out there. How would you define humility? Go ahead. Okay. I think that's what somebody else said. Trey? Okay. Selflessness? Anybody else? Not thinking too highly of yourself? Compassion? Okay. I think, and all of those are absolutely right, but I think one of the important things to remember is humility is actually seeing ourselves as we actually are, not higher, not lower. And it's really taking an honest assessment of ourselves, as Paul talks about not being conformed to the world, but being transformed by the renewing of our mind, as he talks about in Romans chapter 12. It means being gut-level honest with ourselves. So as I look in the mirror, and I'm supposed to be transformed in Christ, it means that I'm living without hypocrisy. But if I'm struggling with that, how do I correct that then? Because in relation to humility, in accordance when it comes to the idea of evangelism, why is humility important? I've seen people turned off by the attitudes of Christians in relation to evangelism when somebody knocks on the door. Because as soon as somebody says, well, I don't go to church, or I attend a particular denomination, or whatever the case is, I've seen individuals kind of turn up their nose and go, oh, really? That's not a humble spirit. And so when we're being sent and that Great Commission is given, and when people encounter us, they have to encounter a Christ-like individual. And humility is seeing ourselves and seeing ourselves at our weakest point too, and being able to be honest with ourselves that there's something that we need to change, right? Jesus talked about in the Sermon on the Mount the idea of what it means to be meek and low in spirit and all of those qualities that he possessed as a servant. Do you remember in Exodus chapter 3 in the desert when Moses had that encounter with God in the burning bush? And you remember Moses asked God to identify himself, basically. And then when God told him he was going to send him back to Egypt to be a representation of God and to lead the people out of Egypt, he in essence told God, I need to see your business card because I want to make sure they know that I'm coming in your name. And one of the things that God said when he asked them, who do I tell them that sent me? And when they asked who sent me in Exodus 3, I think it's 13 and 14, what did God say? I am who I am. You tell them that I am sent you. Jesus made the same reference to that, and we've talked about that in our last few sermons, that Jesus is the I am, when we looked in the book of John and the different nine I am statements with that. And Jesus talked about in relation to who he was and in showing that he was I am, and the same reference that God made. What that says to me, and Jesus later makes this statement, was he said, I'm the same today, yesterday, and tomorrow, that he never changes. Why do you think that's an important statement? I mean, here's our Savior, our God, telling us this. I am the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. I never change. Okay, he won't change with the polls. That's good. Anybody else? Okay, the anchor that holds, good. We can have go ahead, Ron. Okay. Okay, right. Because he doesn't change, because his word is always true, because we understand that we're sanctified by that, John 17 and verse 17. So when we understand the necessity of making sure that we're not Hippocratic, that we're not changing in relation to who we are, the best example that we have in relation to that is Jesus, who said, I'm always the same person. You can always count on me. The promises that I give you are always going to be there. There's nothing that's going to change. And as Rod said, you can have faith and trust in who I am because I always do what I say I'm going to do. Flip that to the other side in relation to evangelism, and why is that important? Because people need to know that we as Christians don't change. There's a consistency with our faith and how we reach out and how we interact with people. And I know that's sometimes difficult because we're human beings. But I think one of the most loving things that I can do for someone is to be honest about myself so that they don't have to sift through my deceptions. So when I meet somebody on their level in relation to the Great Commission and going out and evangelizing and meeting people at their level, people need to see me for what I really am, because if they don't, if they see me different at church, they're going to sift through that deception. And what begins to happen is people begin to lose faith in the church. Even though they should never lose faith in Jesus Christ, if they lose faith in us who are shining our lights to represent who Jesus Christ is, they begin to lose faith in the system itself. So for us to evangelize, and when we think about Jesus in relation to who he was, I doubt when Jesus got up in the morning that he greeted his disciples any different. And I don't think they needed to sift through who Jesus was in relation to how he treated them or treated other people, because he was always the same person. Now, that's not to say you're not going to get up tomorrow and be grumpy and have a bad day. That's not what I'm talking about. But his being the same probably didn't mean that he didn't have emotions or moods, but may have meant that he was always straightforward with them. Now, Jesus didn't have any flaws, but the men that he chose to be apostles and disciples and to follow him had many flaws, did they not? One of the things I've found in relation to my ministry and my evangelism is when I'm real with people and show them that I have flaws too, they're more likely to accept Jesus Christ in relation to their flaws Because many times, what is the thing that you often hear when people don't commit to the gospel? I'm not perfect. I can't live up to the standards. They're too high, right? What's the false misconception there? They think they have to be Jesus. That's the idea. When my brother and I began to talk, he wasn't baptized till later in his life. When my brother and I began to talk, he kind of had the same mentality. He thought that he was having to be perfect in every aspect of his life in relation to him being a Christian. And I said, that's not the way it works. One of the things we have to do in relation to evangelism is that we have to be open. We have to be open with who we are. I'm not saying you make yourself vulnerable to the point where you're laying your whole life story out there. But I'm saying that it's okay when you evangelize to show somebody that you too have made mistakes in the past as well. Why is that important too? People can relate. When evangelism becomes relational, when people can relate to your story, to your how you were converted, how you accepted the gospel, how somebody taught you the gospel, whatever the case is, when people see that you had a past too and you haven't always been this perfect little eggshell Christian that has everything together and they know that you have quirks and there's cracks and all of these things, when people can relate to who you are as a Christian, they can better relate to say, I know that Jesus Christ can fix me too. Because Jesus is the great physician, right? Jeff, go ahead. Sure, absolutely. And that's not an easy thing for us to do. Jeff said in relation to our humility is admitting when we're wrong. Now, raise your hand if you like to admit when you're wrong. Not a single person? One, there we go, Richard. There you go, right. Remember that Jesus chose his disciples to be with him. That was a state of relationship. And when he went out evangelizing and teaching these individuals, his disciples saw Jesus behind the scenes. So when you evangelize, remember that one day those people are going to see you behind the scenes of who you really are. Because eventually what your heart is what they're going to see, right? Proverbs 23 and verse 7. For as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. This shows who you truly are. And so it's important for people to see us at our gut level, honest kind of situation. Remember when you dated your spouse? Remember how you dressed? Yeah, you do. Don't act like that was too long ago. Remember how you smelled? Men, remember all that cologne you went through? Right? Remember how you dressed? Then you get married, what happens? All that glory is revealed, right? They see you for you really are. They see you behind the scenes. They see you at your worst. They see you at your best. But they still love you regardless, right? Because they know what they're getting. Now, of course, we're putting on our best in relation to the dating idea, but as you go through the process, you begin to show who you are. And all of those things are just temporal ideas. But people need to see us for who we really are. It's not a dating game. We're not putting on a fake facade because we're trying to gain somebody. We're trying to gain a soul, and we're trying to lead these individuals to Jesus. Jesus was faithful in his revelation to his disciples. Look at John 15 and verse 15. In Jesus' graduation kind of sermon to his disciples, Jesus said, "No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all that I have heard from my Father I have made known to you." I told you this several times when I would do mission work in Russia. One of the first things, if you want to teach Russians the Bible, they have to know that you're their friend first. And sometimes that takes a long time to develop that relationship. Friendship requires revelation, does it not? When you become friends with somebody, you're ready to reveal who you are, to show them the true nature of what your being is and how you're representing yourself. Jesus was willing to be vulnerable to an extent and open when he shared his Father. Jesus said, "I'm not the master, I'm the servant. I came to serve those, I came to heal those, I came to seek and to save those individuals that are lost." And as Jesus went along further in his ministry, the more friends that he could see, he showed into the inner depths of his life and his emotions as well. Because these are the individuals that sat down in Luke chapter 15 with him when he was struggling with the Pharisees. These are all the individuals that saw Jesus go through all of these different situations and emotions, and Jesus never ever changed in all of that. Didn't matter who came up against him. Didn't matter what they accused him of when they said he wasn't the Son of God. When they berated him, all of these different things, even to the point of death on the cross of Calvary, Jesus never once wavered in who he was, and he was always the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. So when people also see that in us and know that we don't waver in who we are and what we represent, people are more than willing and more likely to say, this is what I want to know about. Because we're real, right? That's what we want. We want to be real. And sometimes I think we come in and we play church because we're afraid for people to see who we really are. Why is that? Basic psychology, we all wear masks. We all hide who we truly are because it hurts to show people our mistakes and our cracks and our errors, right? But what did Jesus say? Let's tear away all of that stuff. The woman at the well, yeah, I know exactly how many husbands you've had. Let's break all that away. The man who was at the pool of Bethesda when he told him to stand up and be healed and he simply just asked him a yes or a no question. Jesus breaks down all of those barriers, but the problem is many times we don't want to let him break down those barriers. Jesus was faithful in his revelation to his disciples, and he judiciously did not satisfy the curiosity seekers because many times they would ask him questions, and what would Jesus say? Well, what does the law say? Well, what do you say? He knew what they were doing. Ever been in a situation like that with somebody when they're asking you about the church? Oh, you're those people who don't use instruments. Oh, you're the only ones who think you're going to heaven. Do you think they really want to know the answer to the questions they're asking? Probably not. Those are the curiosity seekers, or the ones that are trying to bind you up like the Pharisees. They just want to cause a fight. And sometimes we allow them to goad us and pull us into the situation, and then what begins to happen? If you're like me, early on in my Christianity, I was hot-tempered and I had a hot head because I wanted to prove that I was right. I knew the Bible. I wanted them to understand the Bible. It was easy to understand. Why can't you see this? Why you got to be so hard-headed? Why can't you understand that? That didn't get me anywhere with anybody. But in relation to Jesus and when they would try and draw him in and ask him these questions and try and bait him into these situations, what did Jesus always do? Use the word against them. Well, what does the law say? Rightly, you said so, so therefore do it. Jesus, they said, you're not paying tithes and taxes and all these other things. He said, whose money is on the head of the coin? Caesar. Then pay this to Caesar then. So Jesus wouldn't allow himself to be pulled into a situation that was going to show him other than something that he wasn't. And even when his disciples did that and they would get angry over the way that he was treated. Remember Peter in the garden, I guess, in the garden when they came to take him away? Peter pulled out his sword and cut off the ear of Malchus. What did Jesus say? What are you doing? Put that thing away. That's not who we are and that's not what we represent. And when they were dragging him away and falsely accusing him of all these things, let me ask you this question. And this is something I've had to learn as I've grown in my faith, and I've learned it the hard way many times. When somebody throws an accusation in relation to the church that's false, and you know that you have the truth, and you know that you could show them verbatim where it is, and you show them in the Bible, and they continue to rail against you and say, that's false. I don't care. That's not what the Bible said. I had this in with a man concerning baptism. And he continued to rail and rail and rail. And finally, I had this epiphany almost. What did Jesus say? What does the Bible say? I can sit here and tell you all day long, but I've got to go back to the Bible every time, right? Because that's where the truth is. That's where people are sanctified. That's where I can show them what they have to do. Now, if they don't do something with it, then what happens? Do they have the humble spirit? No. And one of the first questions I ask people, are you a truthful person? Well, of course I am. Are you an open person? Open and honest and willing to listen to things? Well, of course I am. Usually they're not. Call me a liar? Well, I've had somebody say, depends on the situation. So that'll tell you they're a liar right there. Situational ethics, you know. But I think what we have to understand in how we look at Jesus and how he related to people was that he always showed and stayed the same throughout. And that's what I'm trying to for us to understand concerning humility. And when we're going to be gut-level honest with people is that we need to really show them who we are. If we think it's true and honest soil that we're trying to evangelize and we know that it's true and good, honest soil, that we're willing to say, you know what, hey, I've made mistakes too. I'm not perfect. I've made mistakes. I've done stupid things. And guess what? Jesus said, and? Nothing I can't fix. I remember when I was little and growing up and I would break something and bring it to my father. Daddy, can you fix this? Yeah, son, I can fix it. Boy, I was all happy. Because Dad was going to fix it and make it better because I couldn't fix it. That's the mentality we need to show people, that they can't fix their broken problems in their life without Jesus. And that's what we're trying to show people. That's what we're trying to show them through evangelism. They've got to understand the truth. Don't get me wrong. You don't get away from the truth. They've got to know the Bible. But at the same time, we have to make it relational, especially in the society that we live today. Go back 30 or 40 years, completely different. Completely different society and culture. But it's different today because people want to know this in relation to their life and how they're going to make it applicable. I know this, now teach me how I use it. Because once I gain the knowledge, I need the wisdom to apply it, right? That comes with time, that comes with being sincere with yourself. That means knowing that sometimes you can be a hypocrite and that you need to understand when we make those mistakes that we can be meek enough and humble enough to say, I need to fix those problems. I went to a gentleman in the church one time to ask him for some advice. And probably one of the most humble answers I ever heard from somebody was, I'm not the person you want to talk to because I'm still struggling with that in my life too. I was like, wow. He was sincere and honest enough to say, look, I struggle with the same thing. I'm the last person you probably need advice over that situation. But I know somebody who can help you. So that told me, no, he's not perfect. An individual that I looked up to and admired greatly, but at the same time that he was willing to understand that he had mistakes too, and that, guess what, I don't have all the answers. And we've got to be willing to do that too in evangelism. You know, one of the things we talked about that as we closed last week is that we've got to make ourselves accessible to society. And sometimes the church has been known to be closed off. And when we become closed off, more so in the South, I don't see it as much here, but more so in the South when I was there, they become closed off as if they have the greatest gift and they don't want to share it. They don't want to send, you know, we sing the song, Send the Light. It's like they want to hide it under a bushel. Put it under their pew. They didn't want to share it with anybody. When I first started preaching, the little congregation I was preaching for, I put together a gospel meeting, and I was going to have these people from the Memphis School of Preaching come down, and one of the men told me I had too many people coming to the gospel meeting. Never heard that before. But he said, that's too much work. You've got too many people coming to the gospel meeting. You trying to hide it? Because people need to see it. You know, humility is about walking in the light. Humility chooses to be real. You know, I think in large people fear being vulnerable. Why do you think that is? Because humility is about being vulnerable. Just like I told you with that man, he said, I'm not the person to talk to about this because I struggle with that same thing. Why do you think in relation to vulnerability that we're so scared of it? Robert? We don't want people to see our imperfections, kind of like what Robert's saying. We don't think people will listen to us. To evangelize people, those people need to see that we're vulnerable, because when we become vulnerable, people come to Jesus and they see Jesus. Again, they see that we're broken and that we were broken and that we've got these things fixed now. Not figured out, but somewhat fixed. But kind of changing gears in relation to this, and this is kind of going into the servant attitude. As Jesus sat down and he called his 12, he said to them, if any one of you would be first, he must be the last of all and the what? Servant of all. So in the idea of humility, of being last and being vulnerable and showing people that we have been broken, the very last, how much is this in keeping with the whole lifestyle of one who would be a servant? Because that's what we are. Being last, how is that in keeping with the lifestyle of being a servant? We live in a society that wants to be first in everything, right? And we start early. Remember in elementary school? I can remember in elementary school in Treasure Island. My dad was stationed there in the Navy. They had the best swing sets ever. And these things would go high. So the boys, there was only like six of them. Man, we would race across that playground to get to those swing sets. And as we're running, you're going, me first, me first, me first. You'd ever think you'd hear kids running out there going, me last, me last, me last? No. That mentality starts early. So it's something, it's a difficult cycle to break. And you picture this gaggle of children running saying, I'm last, I'm last. It doesn't happen because we live in a competitive age. And it's very difficult to choose to compete with somebody who chooses to be last, isn't it? Can you compete with somebody who says, I'm good. Y'all go ahead. That kind of knocks the wind out of your sails and the fun through competition, right? Sibling rivalry. My brother and I competed as we were growing up. We were always running, trying to get to this first. Who could finish the meal first? Who could get more first? I mean, it was a constant thing. So when we become Christians, that first mentality is always there. Jesus says to break the cycle, you have to deny yourself, Matthew 16, pick up your cross and follow me. Denial comes with humility in relation to how we're going to deny ourselves, to know that we're not perfect beings, that we have to look at ourselves and know that we're imperfect creatures, to say that I'm denying myself to be last in everything else I do from this point forward. You think that's a hard concept psychologically for people to kind of mold into their lives? Sure it is. My superiority is always at the expense of someone else, if that's the mentality that I have. If that's the mindset that I have, that I'm superior over other people, then it comes at the expense of souls and how people are treated. So I have to choose, will I be self-seeking or will I be self-serving of others? And that's a choice you make from the day that you become a Christian. Because when we become Christians, we talked about this too last week, or a couple of weeks ago. We have to understand that when we become Christians, we don't have all the answers. And we have a responsibility to those new babes in Christ to make sure that we're teaching them and that we're training them and that we're showing them what it means to live as a Christian, to shine your light as a Christian, because that's a really hard struggle. I put it in kind of this picture, this word picture. You ever have a flashlight and it doesn't matter what kind of batteries you put in it, it just doesn't seem to get bright? You're always shaking it, trying to get the light to come on. It's kind of how I picture a new babe in Christ. They're struggling to get that light to stay on. They're always shaking it. They're always struggling, trying to make sure. And eventually they realize, I just need a brighter light bulb. But that takes time, and that takes growth, and somebody can't do it alone. So again, my superiority in relation to who I am as a Christian, because I've been a Christian for many years, I can't have the mentality to say, well, that person is beneath me. Because that was never the mindset that Jesus had throughout his ministry. Look at Philippians chapter 2 with me for just a second. When you get into Philippians chapter 2 and Paul is preaching to the brethren at Philippi, and he begins to open the chapter with unity through humility and how important it is to be united. And we talked about that several weeks ago. But as you get into this, Paul delves into the person and the nature of Jesus in this letter. He wants the church at Philippi to see Jesus as the man. And he wants them to understand his nature and who he was. And he's going to express his idea of deity, that he was the Son of God. But he's going to talk about what it means for the church to be united through humility is they have to act like Jesus. And one of the first things Paul says as he gets into this idea in verse 5 is to let this mind be in you, which is also in Christ Jesus. Does somebody have the ESV? Can you read the ESV version? So, to have this mind what? Among yourselves, or let this mind be in you. So, the Greek word talks about this idea of literally taking on the mindset of Christ. That is, changing your opinion of who you are and becoming more like Christ. So, when I become a Christian, that's a hard concept for me to understand. Because again, many people come to Christ thinking they have to live this perfect life. And there's like, how can I have this mindset of Christ and be like Christ? What Paul is talking about there in the simplest interpretation of this passage is that though Jesus
and you read a little bit further, deserve to be equal with God, Jesus didn't try to take over the kingdom by force. Jesus came to seek and to save that which was lost. Read a little bit further, verse 6 and 7 there. Who, being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation. What's the ESV say there? Yeah. So emptied himself, okay. So made himself of no reputation, I think, is the King James and the New King James, and took upon him the form of a servant. It was made in the likeness of men. Again, that goes back to John 1 and verse 14. So in the form of God, didn't think it was robbery to leave every and all glories that he had in heaven to come down here and humble himself. Can you imagine? Just think about this for a second. What Jesus Christ had a hold of in heaven. Sitting at the right hand of the throne of God, what he had a hold of as the Son of God. He didn't think it was anything unfair or unjust that was all taken away from him and he was sent down here to be with us. But took upon the form of a what? Servant. And that's really important, as Paul says, have the mind of Christ, but also you need to have the mind of a servant, because that's the form Jesus took on as he came to this earth in the likeness of men, so that he can walk with us and teach us. So if I can relate in relation to that and understanding how Jesus walked and that he was willing to be a servant and serve other people, and if I can show people who Jesus was and how he served other people, people can better relate to who he was as a person. Jesus certainly was God. You know, Jesus never strong-armed anybody into following him, even though he could have. Jesus had all the power in the world to call legions of angels to take him off the cross, but that's not what he did. He had every right to show vengeance to those who were beating him and browbeating him and mocking him and all of these other things while he was on the cross, but that's not what he did. Because the end doesn't justify the means, and meaning there's a thought pattern that goes in the church. And again, we talked about this a few weeks ago too. The end doesn't justify the means in relation to getting him in the water and having numbers doesn't convert souls. It doesn't matter if they understand just to get them into the water. It means that they understand why they're doing what they're doing in relation to their conversion and what that lifestyle is going to entail. You know, we're taught to approach a certain way, ask certain questions, and then we leave them with a tract and we fade away. That's not evangelism. That's the way I was taught. Hands down, that is not evangelism. That's coward evangelism. And that's something I expressed when I was in preaching school, because that's the way we were taught. Knock on the door, hand them a tract, and say good luck. Built no relationship with the person, haven't engaged the person. I've simply handed them a piece of paper and say, now you figure it out on your own. I don't read anywhere in the Bible where Jesus did that. He certainly didn't walk up to the woman at the well and hand her a piece of paper and say, good luck with that. Instead, he engaged the person. Again, it becomes relational. Christ's attitude, Paul says, is commanded. It contains one of the greatest challenges, I think, for us in the New Testament. Certainly the Great Commission is difficult for us, but to attain and achieve the mind of Christ, to understand what it means to be a servant, I think there's one translation that says, let this disposition be in you. And I kind of like that translation. Let this disposition. What's disposition mean? Manner in which I think and the manner in which I act, right? My disposition, who I am. So the manner in which I think and act has to be like Christ. Robert, go ahead. Yeah. Right, yeah. Putting ourselves away, right? Mm-hmm. Again, in showing that too to us and what he was willing to push away and what we have to push away also. And when we begin to push away self and we make it relational to those that we're trying to evangelize, and we're not making it about ourselves but more about the person and who we're trying to relate to, when that evangelism becomes relational, it becomes more real to the person. When Jesus got down at the level of those to whom he was evangelizing, it became more real for those individuals.
But I've never agreed it, and I've done it. And I'll be the first to say I was guilty, to knock on a door, hand them a flyer, and turn around and walk away. Without telling them what you're there for, without telling them what you represent or what you're trying to do, or why you're there to begin with. Why are you at that door to begin with? Let me ask that. Is it simply just to invite them to a meeting, to a revival? I don't even like the term meeting. Because when I think of meeting, I think of something I don't want to go to. They call a meeting at work. What do you say? Oh, great. Got to go to a meeting, probably another meeting for this meeting later to meet about that meeting, right? I know that's how it was when I worked for the federal government. But revival, the term, it is reviving us again, right? Like Brother God talked about last year in our gospel meeting. Reviving us, getting us revived again in relation to evangelism. So when we go and we hand out a flyer and we turn around and walk away, what is that telling the person? To me, it doesn't show that I have more concern not only for their soul, but what I'm inviting them to. So that I have to be willing to spend time on the porch when I knock on that door, knowing I'm terrified. I told you, I had a preacher friend of mine that said every time he knocked on the door, he'd say, "Please, God, nobody open the door." Because he was scared to death. And I understand that. I remember the first time I went door knocking. I was terrified. But just remember who you're trying to reach and what you're trying to get them to understand and that you're trying to save their soul. And if they can even see you vulnerable standing on their porch, what is that going to show them? Not to say you're not going to fall in line and run against some Pharisees or scribes on those porches. You will. But if you can show them even that I just met you and I don't know you from Adam, I'm willing to be vulnerable and show you who I am so I can show you who Jesus is, how do you think they're going to relate to you rather than just handing them a tract and turning around and walking off the porch? Johnny, go ahead. I'll let you close us out. Absolutely. Exactly. Not like extended family, right? Like immediate family. That's how we want to treat them. What's that? Not the outlaws, yeah. So, any other last questions or comments? I know we're about to, they're gathering in the foyer there. All right, thank you.